At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
And good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. Welcome into the Chase and Big Joe Show, brought to you by Omni Nashville Hotel. Chase McCabe still on assignment. So because Chase is gone, I made an executive call in Chase's place, Dr. Crane. I said, you know what? I need Paul Kaharsky in here for 2 hours. We've never done radio together. So joining me for 2 hours, Paul Kaharsky. Hey, buddy.
How we doing? Thanks for the invite. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Good weekend.
Very good weekend. I live very lazy weekends. My wife and son can attest. I do it all under the veil of assignment. But I've got a very cozy leather chair in front of the TV, and my eyes closed during some of these assignments
on
the weekend.
Are you you're a big soccer dad, right?
I am not a big soccer dad. I'm a big baseball dad, and we had a lot of rainouts. My guy is...
Done with soccer?
Yeah, he's been done with soccer. Well, he played soccer on the varsity team at his middle school, Sunset Middle School, as kind of an athlete added on to a team that had a handful of good soccer players,
right.
And they actually won the county, which was sweet, but that was his reemergence. He gave up soccer a while ago and is a full-time baseball guy.
Oh,
and so
man.
We had some rainouts last week. He had a hitting lesson. I should do this, Joe. You know how it goes. I didn't take him to his hitting guy for a long time, and he was kind of scuffling. Took him to his hitting guy on a Wednesday night. The next day, first pitch, boom, into the gap, 3-for-3. Season turns around. Then they've been rained out every game since. So I'm like, do you still have it? Do you still have it? He's got all your stuff down? He's like, yeah, I'm good. So he's got 3 games this week, so we're fired up for that.
We had a good hitting coach on 2 weeks ago with Howard Johnson from the 86 Mets.
He played for Howard Johnson's organization for a while.
Nice.
And I got to know Howard and some of his people a bit and took pictures and posted them on Facebook and everything, which is hard for me because the 86 Mets are one of my least favorite winning teams because I'm a Yankee guy, and that was during high school for me, it was very difficult to watch the Mets be successful.
It only happened once, though, the 86, right?
Yeah, but I mean, for a Yankee fan, Mets, Red Sox, that's the worst possible,
right.
World Series matchup.
Yeah, too bad the Mets won that one. All right, so Paul's in with us for 2 hours this morning. All right, so we got the draft in 10 days, thank God. And your thoughts on this, we're going to go deep dive into all this Titan stuff today, pretty deep into this with coaches and players and where this organization got to where it is right now. All right, so you've covered this team. You've been in these drafts. You've seen everything. As far as most anticipated draft, each year it changes. But I got to think what they have at number 7, what they're about to do. I think there's a lot of eyeballs on this football team for the first time in a long time. Agree or disagree?
Well, the next draft is always the most anticipated draft, and the draft with the highest pick is always the most anticipated draft. And there's intrigue here because you don't know who necessarily is going to be on the board. So when they're drafting 2, and you know Jameis Winston's going first, there wasn't much mystery to Marcus Mariota being the second pick, and there wasn't much mystery to Vince Young because Bud had made his decree pretty public.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the other thing, it's a lot different than it used to be. The draft industrial complex has grown by leaps and bounds, and everybody and his brother is on one of these 2 or 3 draft machines where you can make your picks and also where you can make trades. I think trades on PFF's draft machine or this other draft simulator that I play with are incredibly easy to make. And so everybody thinks, well, the Titans could easily get not just 3 picks in the first 3 rounds, but, you know, 4. because I'm getting these trade back offers at 7 and at 38, or at 7 and then again at 45 that I dealt back with from 7.
Right.
You know, so I could easily set myself up with 5 picks in the first 4 rounds through these machines, which probably is a lot easier done on these machines than it is in real life. So everybody throws their mocks out there, and the Titans have 15 picks. I don't think they're going to have 15 picks in a couple weeks.
Is Joe Alt, is he the plug-in guy? I mean, we talk about him all the time. Like, he fills a critical need on this football team. If he's there, is he the answer?
You know, I'd say they're good odds that he's the answer. I'd say they're good odds if he's there that Malik Nabers is gone. I think Malik Nabers is awfully hard to pass up if he's there, for how dynamic you want to be on offense and everything. So that would be the one stumbling block to Alt for me. And then the other thing is, you know, does Bill Callahan think that Joe Alt is substantially better than Latham and, you know, even Mims and Guyton and a lot of other offensive linemen who are, you know, a bunch of them you'd say are like 13-ish and a bunch of them are like you'd say 18-ish or 20th. Right. And if he really feels like there's not that big a gap between Alt and these other guys, Fashanu, you know, and they find a willing trade partner to get to 11 to 13 to 18 and to recoup that third round pick that they lost in the Levis trade and more, you know, it's awfully intriguing because their need list it is so long. I think too many people are thinking, oh, they got Calvin Ridley, so they're fine at wide receiver. They're not. Their edge rush situation is bad. You know, corner, you know, defensive line is thin.
Right.
And corner, you know, you've got 3 very good corners, but what are the odds that all 3 of them play all the time? The drop off from 3 to 4 is enormous. Inside linebacker is a hole right now. Next to Kenneth Murray, who's got a very narrow kind of precise skill set, and the depth on this roster is very poor throughout. There's nowhere you'd look at this team and say it's deep.
I just think drafting Alt, you solve that need, then you move on. I mean, I think you can't solve every need Thursday, Friday, Saturday next week. I think you just to me, get the biggest problem, left tackle, boom, put him in there, and then go from there.
Can't solve every need, true, but if Alt say and Latham are graded virtually the same by them, and they can get Latham at 13 and wind up with a third rounder out of it and address 3 problems in the first 3 rounds instead of 2 problems in the first 2 rounds, I could see the argument to do that. If they think Alt is, you know,
right,
better, you know, and worth not getting that other thing, I would have no problem writing down his name and handing it in.
Have you seen this draft with this team for so long now? Is there a chance they overthink this?
There's a chance to me, Joe, that everybody overthinks. I think there's too much time between the combine and the draft. I really do. I think the whole league would be better served if they moved the draft up 2-3 weeks. I think ultimately teams would find themselves better served by having the guys in and on their roster and beginning to work with them and getting that time on the other side of this where you start to work with them, get your playbooks in their hands, get them with your strength and conditioning coach, get them football training as opposed to combine training and get all that behind them and stuff. I think there's a lot of room to overthink, second guess. You love a guy and you start to punch holes in him.
Right.
And they consider that part of the process, but these circle back. I think it's too much. But I think any team's prone to overthinking. With this group, we don't know. I mean, we've seen Rand Carthon once. We don't know how much they were his guys, how much they were Vrabel's guys.
Right.
You know, there were factions there. And we haven't seen them work with Chad Brinker and with Brian Callahan at all. So there's a lot of unknown, which works to their advantage in terms of other teams not knowing who exactly they like, what exactly their tendencies are, what kind of trade partners they are, and all of that stuff. So we don't know. In terms of the offensive line, what they do on offensive line,
yeah.
Look, Bill Callahan's one of the best guys in the game. Whatever they do with the offensive line, I'm going to say, hey, that's what Bill Callahan wanted, and I'm going to feel pretty good about it because I feel pretty good about him after a long stretch here of not having the best offensive line coaches.
All right, so we've discussed this before on the show with Chase and I about they draft, they move back, they just gather and gobble up all this draft capital. Do you trust them enough to get it correct with the third, fourth, and fifth rounders?
Don't know. I mean, have to wait and see. The one thing is, you know, and I think the draft is a big foolish game in this regard. Another reason I'd like to see it moved up. So what we do is, and look, a lot of these people who scout the draft are spectacularly good, right? Dane Brugler is phenomenal, and this beast that he puts out is, you know, a hell of a document to have as a resource. Mike Herndon, who writes for me, Zach Lyons, who's written for me for the first time, at paulkuharski.com. These guys dive into the draft and watch are real football savants and watch film and they watch college football and they know these guys. I don't know most of these guys after the third round.
Right.
I'm not going to pretend
Same.
To. And I don't see the logic in getting to know all of these guys who some aren't going to be in the league. Some are going to be bench warmers and on an NFC team that I'm going to see once every, you know,
right.
4 or 8 years. but what we do is we let the draft industrial complex tell us the order that these guys should go or what their value should be. Like Junior Colson, say, who is a local guy and played very well at Michigan and could well be a great solution for the Titans at inside linebacker, is, you know, looked at like in the 60s, 70s, 80s, say. Well, the Titans are in the 30s. That would be too early for him, according to, you know, the draft industrial complex. That's the consensus of the draft industrial complex. So, and then we grade everybody based on what they do according to what we've decided they should do.
Right.
All the time, it's our measurement. So it's our standard. And then we measure them against our standard. Well, like, what are we? I mean, so some guys have good peaks inside and have some good scouts who tell them stuff, but they have no universal view of the inside of 32 teams. So how are we judging teams against what we set up as how valuable guys are? It's kind of a crazy game, and everybody's bought into it.
Right,
you put up a mock draft, and people are reading it like crazy. Especially now when you're in one like where everybody's presuming a trade to 4 for J.J. McCarthy.
Right. Yeah, exactly right.
Is there going to be a trade to 4 for J.J. McCarthy? We have no idea. But put one up and bang, 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 bang. Clicks like crazy. I mean, how many mock drafts can people read? And I say this is somebody that's got 3 mock drafts coming on my site in the next 2 weeks.
There's so many mock drafts out there. All right, we're with Paul Kuharski. He's in for Chase McCabe until 11 o'clock today. You can read all this stuff at paulkuharski.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about some draft choices Titans have made throughout the years, which have been head-scratchers, because I want to get your opinion. You know all the stories. You know where all the bodies are buried.
My memory is not as good as you think.
I bet it is.
Here.
I know half the stories, but you know all the stories. But I just, it's more of a, how did we get here with this franchise where they are now, like with the great Tommy Smith and the things that went on there as well. So if you love the Titans, want to hear this history of the Titans, do not go anywhere right here. This is the Chase and Big Joe Show brought to you by Omni National Hotel, 1025, 1063 The Game. Interrupt this or no?
You just leave it gone. We just play Springsteen for 2 hours.
Here we go. Well done. Welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe cheer here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Paul Kuharski in for Chase, who's on assignment. All right, Paul, we're going to make a deep dive, of course, in the Titans stuff. You hit it on earlier, which is a story which I love to talk about all the time. The 2006 draft, the one where they got Vince Young, the night before the Texans, you know, was all they're going to take Vince Young, and they signed Mario Williams the night before the draft on, I think it was that Friday night or whatever it was, before they moved the draft to Thursday. And then Reggie Bush goes to the Saints, and then Vince comes here. And there was that debate for years, Paul, between Floyd, Jeff, and Bud about Jay Cutler, Matt Leinart, and Vince Young, and then Bud makes the VY my guy. My question to you, Paul, is what if Vince Young had been that guy, had been here for 10 or 11 years, had been the all-pro quarterback, how would that change the narrative of what we look at this football team now?
Well, does that guy take you to and win a Super Bowl? I mean, if he takes you to and wins a Super Bowl, things change. Your franchise changes. But I honestly have this thinking, like, the year the Titans went to the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs with Vrabel, what was that, 19?
Yes.
If they win two more games that year, and I've had this conversation with the press room. We talk about it sometimes up there. You know, if they won two more games that year, obviously, you know, media floods to town for the parade, probably floods to town for the draft, and it's a Titans are a big, big deal during training camp that year. 5 games into 2020, are the Titans still a media darling as defending Super Bowl champs? Maybe like the halo effect from that lasts through the next season and depends on what they do. But consider like they have a typical Super Bowl follow-up season.
Right.
You know, maybe go to the playoffs and lose. Does it like change the organization in some fundamental way? It certainly does, like that you walk into the lobby and see a Lombardi trophy.
Sure.
It certainly changes the price tag on people who helped win you that championship. So Tannehill and Henry and you know the big defenders on that team and the like. But I just can't convince myself that it really changes the national perception
right.
of the Tennessee Titans, generally speaking, unless they turned it into a thing where they're sustainable winners and don't ebb and flow the way they do.
Because, you know, you go back to when you take a quarterback, it's always a critical point in the team. 06 Vince, Locker and 11, which I think people are like, that was a terrible pick. Look, there was a lockout that year. They had no quarterback except for, what, Matt Hasselbeck?
It was a bad pick, though. Jake Locker was a completely responsive pick to Vince Young. So Vince Young didn't come to work early, didn't stay late, can't nobody tell me nothing, he
right.
said at one time, right? Well, Jake Locker was eminently coachable, was going to be the first guy in the building, was going to stay late, was a sponge, wanted to be coached, all of that stuff. And so they saw those qualities in him, and it made him more valuable because he was so opposite the guy that they had grown sick of and had such problems with. And so it became they valued him more than they should have because of those qualities, and they overlooked the things that made him likely to not be good, that he wasn't accurate and didn't show signs of becoming accurate. And most guys don't get more accurate. Josh Allen in Buffalo is a big exception that
right.
got more accurate. They're certainly hoping that Will Levis gets more accurate, though he doesn't have the accuracy issues that Jake Locker had when he arrived here. But that's how one bad pick in 2026 then leads to a bad pick however many years later.
Right.
And you kill yourself for two generations of quarterback.
You do. And that's why all these draft experts, I think most of them are idiots, because the Jake Locker talk was he's a can't miss guy. He should have come out
before.
Yeah, he should have come out the year before.
Probably.
Oh yeah, and all that stuff. So I'm like, I take it with a grain of salt because my default for all this is Tom Brady. I mean, because you go back and read Tom Brady, he's like, he's slow, he's not mobile, he can't throw the ball deep, and that's the default for this. All right,
well, he's a super exception too, though. I mean, you're not finding a Hall of Fame quarterback at 199.
Right,
he's the super outlier.
Yeah, so you never can tell exactly what's going to happen there. All right, so they get it. Let me ask you this. So Locker's here 11, 12, 13, 14. Wisenhunt shows up in 14. Did Wisenhunt not say ruin Locker, but did Locker feel like, all right, Wisenhunt's here, I'm done, I don't want to be part of this?
I don't know. I mean, I think it got difficult for him. He needed to win over a new coach and a new staff. And I don't think Wisenhunt obviously wasn't incredibly impressed given the fact that he was a Mettenberger guy in a lot of ways. And Mettenberger was, you know, I don't think wins are a quarterback stat. You know, I tend to frame it as they went 0-10 with Mettenberger at the helm. But it's telling how you do with a quarterback, especially when it's an extreme number. You know, if you go on a 12-0 run with a guy at quarterback, that
right.
says something about the quarterback. And I think Mettenberger, am I correct? They didn't win a game with Mettenberger quarterback.
I think you're correct on that.
And kept rolling him out there. And then Charlie Whitehurst was a factor when Mettenberger was hurt. We're not talking good names there in any
right.
way, shape, or form. that were playing ahead of Locker. And Hasselbeck, you know, was here during Locker also, and he played big the first year. He was the starter. The second year, it was their plan that he would kind of pull back and help Locker take over. And I don't think, and I love Matt, and Matt was one of the greatest guys to deal with from a media perspective here, but I don't think he eased up to help the young guy. Not that he was a bad guy in any way, but he was like, I see opportunity here for me to keep going. I'm not going to, you know, yield in any way for this kid to take over. And I think some in the building didn't love that, because the agreement coming in was kind of like, you'll be the guy and then he'll take over. And then Matt saw, like, well, he's not that good. And
right. You're right.
I'm not yielding for him to take over since he hasn't seized it.
All right, so we go to 2015 and take Mariota with the second pick in the draft. Winston went first. Mariota went second. I remember being at the autograph signing down at Nissan Stadium. They made the pick, and Kendall Wright and Justin Hunter were just disgusted. I mean, their reaction was, oh, my God, they were terrible and all this stuff. And so you saw, like, guys like that, they really didn't – they were all Team Mettenberger, which was really awful still as well. So Mariota comes in, and then –
well, that's telling right there.
Yeah.
Because Kendall Wright – had some promise when he showed up, and then he wasn't exactly in shape later in his career. You remember they used to have those – Waterson used to put him through guys who didn't dress for games, did their workout pregame. You watched them on the field, did the kettlebell workout and all of that.
Right.
My understanding is that ended because Kendall Wright was embarrassed when he wasn't active to be doing those workouts and went to whoever the GM was at the time. Still might have been tail end of Floyd, and complained about doing it, and it got shut down.
I think it was Rustin Webster.
Okay, yeah. Justin Hunter was such a not smart guy that on a day that he wasn't practicing because he had an ankle injury, he took a bet in the locker room about whether he could hit the ceiling tile, and had, you know, players and media surrounding him to jump to touch the ceiling tile in the thing. So here's a guy that's not playing, not practicing because of an ankle thing, but he's broad jumping in the locker room to touch the ceiling tile. So these are the two guys whose judgment we're getting about picking Mariota, a Heisman Trophy winner, who's being picked to elevate the franchise, and is not a bad pick at that time. The better of the two picks, I think. Between he and Winston at that time, Winston an interception machine.
Yes.
Now, Marcus turns out to be a disappointment in a lot of other departments, but, you know, give me a choice between Marcus Mariota and Kendall Wright and Justin Hunter. I'm taking Mariota, and I'm not a Mariota guy at all.
Where did that go wrong with Marcus?
Marcus,
because he showed promise, you know. I mean, the rallying and winning games, the Eagles game when they beat with the pass to Corey Davis. I mean, and what he did in the get the Chiefs in the playoffs. I mean, there were things
that
like
that pass against Cardinals was Kenny Britt in the back of the end.
No, the Eagles. Remember, he hit Eagles. Corey Davis. Yeah, they drove down the last play of the game.
He, no, the one I'm thinking of is probably Vince. He's a little soft. Sounds like such an insulting word. But, like, he probably could have played that game against the Colts that was the season decider where Blaine Gabbert played. For the longest time, I said he has the skill set and the mindset to be a winning NFL quarterback. But then he was very set in his ways. Also, like, going into that last year where it was all or nothing, I asked him, like, you know, Here you are, and it's clear it's kind of all or nothing season for you. What are you going to change about your approach? Like, what, as you go for it now, and you know this is it. What are you going to do different? He said, "Oh, nothing. I'm gonna keep doing the things that I've been doing." And I'm like, "Why? It's not working. Like,
right.
Why wouldn't you change something?" He's just like over steady. You want your quarterback to be steady, and he just was so reliant on it. I know you can be a calm quarterback and win, but his personality just didn't translate to the kind of leadership that you need from that position for a team. And fans here just gave him too much benefit of the doubt. I mean, look, he took him from from really bad to averagely good,
yeah,
which was fine. But they made it like that was miraculous works. Lots of quarterbacks could have done that. The second pick in the draft should do more than that.
Oh, I totally agree.
And still he sainted. Like, they were rooting for him when he was with the Raiders, when he came in and threw a couple. Like, I'm really put off by people that root so much for people and so less for teams. I use it all the time. Greg Nettles, my favorite player of all time, when he got traded to the Padres from the Yankees, I didn't become like a secondary Padre fan. I mean, I checked the box score to see what he did. Yeah. I love this guy. I love him to this day. Like, talking about him gets me excited, and I flash back to 78 and 79.
Sure.
But when he got traded, like, that, the Yankees made a decision to trade him. I was a Yankees guy, so I was on the Yankees side.
Yeah, right. And old Craig Nettles.
I just don't understand when the Titans decide they're done with Derrick Henry. Aren't you about the Titans?
True.
Like, shouldn't you get invested in Tony Pollard and Spears?
Yeah, it's not going to happen there. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. I'm going to tell Paul, when I realized Marcus was done with his football team, it was a telling moment one day, and you were there, Paul, and I will discuss that when we come back. All right, you listen to the Chase and Big Joe Show right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by Omni Nashville Hotel.
Very, very music.
Welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show. Paul Kraharsky in for Chase today. I love that song. I saw the live performance one time of him doing Cadillac Ranch, and it was just – and I'm not a big Springsteen fan, but that was perfection. That song is perfection right
now. It's a great one.
It is. All right, Paul, you got some big news regarding some Titans players today. Can we find this on paulkraharsky.com?
You can. And news at paulkraharsky.com is always open to everybody. Was digging a little bit because Ryan Stonehouse, suffered that miserable injury December 3rd against the Colts on an all-time bad special teams day that ended up getting Craig Aukerman fired. But we never knew the extent of the injury. We knew it was gruesome, but we didn't know. It turns out he tore his ACL and MCL. Ugh. In addition to breaking a bone in that left plant leg. So I know he's not doing anything for the spring. If you go 9 months out, that takes him to the beginning of September, opening Sunday of NFL season, September 8th. September 3rd would be 9 months for him. I hate to predict timetables and stuff, but the plant leg for a punter is an interesting thing. It's different than anything we're thinking of. You know, and we've seen a lot of ACLs come through. Robert Woods, Bud Dupree, Taylor Lewan. You just have to wonder. But it turns out that Ty Zentner, who took over for Stonehouse last year, is under contract. So they signed him through 2024. So he's around. So God forbid that Stonehouse isn't ready for opening day. They've got a qualified punter on the roster. Caleb Farley, the other big injury concern from last year, and I know I'm amongst those that count on nothing from him. I mean, when he suffered the back injury 2 years ago, he was only playing special teams.
Right.
He wasn't even qualified in the coaching staff's eyes to play any cornerback. And we saw when he got himself demoted to special team, he was completely lost at cornerback. But we mentioned earlier, you know, outside of their top three cornerbacks now, Snead, Owusu, and McCreary, the drop-off is significant to guys like Trey Avery and Eric Garrar. So, you know, Caleb Farley is going to get a chance, I think, to one last chance to kind of say, hey, I could be the third outside guy here. So he's back in action, from my understanding,
good,
for what they're doing now in the OTAs, which is light at the beginning, is mostly weight training and meetings and stuff. But I think he's set to go now. A lot of people are like, you got to cut the guy. They'll pay him what he's due this year, and the cap number is the same, whether he's on the roster or not on the roster. So it makes absolutely no sense to do anything with him until the end of camp and you see what he's doing, unless you're scared to death of him being injured again, which is a legitimate concern. But again, you're paying him the same way either way. So if Caleb Farley's not on this team, it'll come at the end of camp when he gets cut for not making the team on skill because the finances don't make a difference.
Well, I mean, what a great story if he comes back and becomes a a decent NFL cornerback, it'd be a great story.
Would be a great story. It still would be a miserable story that you spent the 22nd pick in the draft on a guy who could come back to be your third outside cornerback conceivably in a best-case scenario. And I think there's a lot of reason not to expect it. But Denard Wilson, a cornerback, a defensive back guy as the coordinator. Chris Harris was new last year as the corners coach and didn't get to work with Caleb Farley, who practiced for the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season but never played. It was on PUP. So he's got new eyes on him. It's virtually the fresh start he would get going somewhere else. So, and he's such a good guy. He lost his father last year, we know, in the explosion, gas leak explosion at his family home in North Carolina. So wish him well. But he's like a lot of guys on this team. Like, you hope something good happens, but there's no reason to expect it. And I'd put him at the bottom of that list. You know, Burks has a better chance. Phillips has a better chance. But I wouldn't count on any of those guys. They're all great.
Oh, man. You can read all this stuff at paulkuharski.com. Real quick, I want to tell you my Mariota story. And it has to do with Tom Brady. Remember 2019, they came here for the practice, whatever? Tom Brady, that was the 2019 season. I know that's the year when the Titans beat them in the playoffs. But that 7-on-7, you remember, Tom Brady was carving up the Titans secondary that day, carving them up. And it was amazing watching Brady do this work because he was, you know, talking back and forth to Vrabel. And it was fun, all that stuff. Then Mariota gets out there and it's awful. I mean, he's airmailing passes that are hitting me at Channel 4. I mean, they were absolutely awful. I'll never forget, after an awful series, he threw two interceptions back-to-back. Robinson comes over to Vrabel, and they start talking. And I'll never forget, Paul, in my mind, I'm thinking, they're done with him. They want the opportunity to be done with him. And that Denver game out there was the worst performance by a pro quarterback I had ever seen in my life.
It was terrible.
And then Tannehill came in and took over. It was awful. And then Tannehill became, I think, arguably the second best quarterback in this franchise.
Oh, I think it's inarguable.
Since they moved here?
Yeah. I mean, there's the third place contestants are poor. Ryan Tannehill, for his playoff failures and the big playoff failure, which deservingly he gets hit for.
Right.
But if you look at his overall body of work, and it wasn't long enough period. You'd like it to be a longer period. But the Tannehill, Henry, Titans, conceivably the second best group. Now you can go back to AFC Championship run and what when they went to the Raiders
02
in 02 or in 06 when they were pretty good. But I'd put them against those teams.
Yeah. He was,
you know, 02 was the best. I mean, 2000 was the best team that this team's ever had. They blew it in the playoffs against Baltimore, which was the beginning of a trend. But the team coming off the Super Bowl that added Randall Godfrey, that traded basically John Runyon for Fred Miller, that, and Jeff Fisher said, you know, he thought that was his best team. I think that's the best team they ever had. McNair, a year more experienced, and all of that. But I would put that the best of Henry Tannehill in contention for the second best version of this team.
Yeah, I agree. The third place people are really not being there. All right, I've always wanted to ask you this. 2020 draft, take Isaiah Wilson. Do we not, or at some point of this, Sam Pittman, who's a coach at Arkansas, was his coach at Georgia, offensive line coach, and he raved about Isaiah Wilson.
Full endorsement.
What happened? And don't give me it was COVID. We couldn't meet face-to-face. You got tape. You got tape on this guy at Georgia for 3 or 4 years. What happened?
I mean, did he change? He certainly changed a lot. And is some of that change not forecastable? Yeah. So I'm a little bit sympathetic on that. They got screwed by a guy who changed his stripes. But they preached love ball. What we want are guys who love ball. And their love ball meter broke at a certain stage there when they brought in Jadeveon Clowney, who didn't play like he loved ball in the 8 games that they got out of him. And they made it like, oh, you guys don't understand all these things he's doing. You have to have a real nuanced understanding to see the massive impact that Jadeveon Clowney's having. He's not touching the quarterback, and he's not close to the quarterback, but there are things, Joe, that are going on that he's doing that are unbelievable. Just a load of crap. And And Vic Beasley, who didn't care about football at all. He cared so little about football that he got fined $500,000, I think, for not showing up to camp after they signed him to a lucrative deal. He didn't love ball. And Isaiah Wilson certainly didn't love football. And I mean, there had to be strains of that in what they saw from him. And certainly in the investigation you do of him, talking to everybody that knows him.
Sure.
The janitors, the secretaries, the people in the cafeteria, all of that. So they failed on a large scale with that. And the thing that bothered me most, and John Robinson was very good at raising his hand and saying, my bad. He had a press conference when they cut Kevin Dodd, and he basically said, like, I missed
right
on him. But with Isaiah Wilson, they basically said, like, hey, dude changed. He lost it, and, you know, it's on him. And they washed their hands of it very casually, very nonchalantly to me.
Right.
They were not tortured. I mean, maybe in-house they were tortured for a time, but it seems to me like they were tortured for a time, and then they had a meeting, and they said, you know what? This isn't on us. It's on him. And, okay, that's fine. And for a love ball organization, I just think that they – and the ramifications are still being heard today. Joe Alt, the necessity for Joe Alt right now, the necessity for a left tackle right now, conceivably wouldn't exist if Isaiah Wilson was a hit. It conceivably wouldn't exist if Dylan Raidens was a hit.
True.
And Dylan Raidens was chasing Isaiah Wilson. So I never held it against them that they didn't sign Jack Conklin, because Jack Conklin – had a poor year coming off a bad knee, and he was going to be very expensive. So if you want to be a team that replenishes that guy, that's fine.
Sure.
But when you replenish him, you have to hit. And they missed on Isaiah Wilson as big as you can miss, one of the all-time first-round draft busts. And in Dylan Raidens, a second-round draft pick, they get now a serviceable backup guard.
Yeah.
0-for-2 there, and still chasing. You can maybe put Petit Frere in that list. I mean, they spent a first, a second, and a third chasing a right tackle, and those right tackles all should be capable left tackles technically.
Absolutely, but I still think that they tried to blame it on COVID because they didn't see Isaiah Wilson face to face. But I think Sam Pittman to me deserves.
The guy's name is Lazy Panda. His Twitter handle. I mean, that alone should start you on an investigation. The guy's right. Proudly calling himself Lazy.
Oh, that's terrible.
Where's your investigative chain on that?
Yeah, you're exactly right. All right, Paul Kucharski in. You can get all the stuff at paulkucharski.com. He's in for Chase. Chase will be back tomorrow as well. A lot more to come with Paul until 11 o'clock this morning. This is fun, a kind of a deep dive into the Tennessee Titans to tell where they got where they are now. We'll talk more with Paul with that coming back. This is the Chase and Big Joe Show brought to you by Omni National Hotel, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Make sure to join the Natural Super Speedway in the city of Lebanon for Speedway on the Square this Saturday, April the 20th from 1 to 6 in downtown Lebanon. Stop by and bring the family for a day filled with inflatables, face painting, balloon art, live music, and a ticket giveaway to the Ally 400 NASCAR Cup Series race at 3:30. That's all this Saturday down in Lebanon. I'm taking Dr. Crane down there. Dr. Crane, you love the face painting, don't you?
I love that stuff. Give it to me.
I know one person who hates
deep fried Oreos too. I'm with that.
You're there. I know one person who hates the face painting, and that's our guest this morning, Paul Kucharski. Paul, you like the face painting with the kids?
I like it for the kids. For the kids, sure.
You're a kid at heart. Come on, PK.
He is a kid at heart.
I mean, I don't think there was face painting when I was a kid.
Yeah, there was. Come on, don't neglect it.
Did you have a fun childhood growing up?
I had a fun childhood growing up. I mean, I think you and I are probably in the same place. Like, I got on my bike and I disappeared for hours and hours,
right.
And I played pickup baseball, and I built a baseball field in my big backyard.
Yeah,
you know, and did all kinds of things that are completely unheard of for kids today.
Paul, were you one of those guys that got the baseball cards and put them in between like the bike wheels, and they just made noise?
I did a little bit of that, but I didn't want to ruin good baseball cards, so crappy baseball cards I might have put in my spokes. But I wasn't fascinated with my bike making noise. But it was functional. You know, my bike got me places.
That was the best. Also, kids, like my son will never realize who Tony Kubek was on Saturday afternoon. You know, I mean, the baseball game of the week. Yeah. It was the best. It was the absolute. Now you get every baseball game streamed on. I get all that. It's great now. But there's something about the anxiety and waiting to that Saturday afternoon game.
Yeah, and now, you know, baseball to me has changed to a degree. Like, I have a fantasy team, so I pay a little bit. That forces me to pay a little bit of attention outside of my Yankee scope, but I don't care about baseball beyond my team. So, like, my education in the league is, you know, I just saw some Guardians because the Yankees played the Guardians.
Right.
But that's all I'll know about the Guardians.
Yeah, I still think, and I know you're a huge Yankees fan, I still think, and follow me on this, that David Price intentionally gave up Jeter's home run for his 3,000 hit. If you go back and watch that pitch from David Price, it was like batting practice right down the middle. Now, David Price is forever in history and forever the lore of.
You think he wanted to be in the lore?
Absolutely he did. I know it's a weird take. I know it's idiotic, but I'm telling you right now, watch that pitch from David Price. That was a home run that you and I could have hit out.
Well, I mean, I do know it happens. John Kruk tells a story. He was going to retire. I don't even think it was a milestone hit. He just wanted to have a base hit and, like, leave the stadium. And he went 0-for in, like, the first four games of the season. Then he was playing a team. They had a friend on, and he asked him who the starter was and was he a good guy or whatever. And would he just groove him a fastball so that he could get it over with? And his friend told him, if you step in and I'm tugging on my hat, he's on board. And Kruk said he's walking in the batter's box and he couldn't find his friend anywhere. Then he was running up. He found him right before he stepped in the box, running up to the thing, tugging on his hat. And they were playing in Baltimore.
Right.
And I don't know what team Kruk ended with, but... So the guy grooved no fastball. He singled off and he left the game and he drove home to Philadelphia and he turned on the broadcast to watch the end of the game.
Right.
And the announcers were saying, yeah, we're not sure what happened with John Kruk. We think it's a hamstring.
He's gone. Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, my goodness. All right, that's the first hour. Paul's going to stay here until 11 o'clock today and fill in for Chase, who is on assignment. We'll be back tomorrow. Also, make sure to score big this spring. League Company and the Nashville Predators in the $10,000 Power Play giveaway. And for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 towards League Company Home Services. Nice. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 towards League Company Home Services. Go online to leaguecompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's leaguecompany.com/giveaway and the $10,000 Power Play giveaway contest. Entries are accepted until this Saturday, April the 20th. League Company, all you need. Back with more right here on the Chase and Big Joe Show. 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by Omni Nashville Hotel.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.